Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all levels of professional baseball to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, the Tool Shed podcast has you covered with rankings, player analysis, and in-depth discussion. And now, here's your host, Eric Cross.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed podcast, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 389. Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Eric Cross. You can find me on Twitter at EricCrossMLB, and the show is at ToolShedPod. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. You can also find my content over on RotoBaller or on my Patreon, which can be found in my Twitter bio or at ToolShedFantasy.com. And make sure you check out all the great content over on RotoBaller and win more with RotoBaller's MLB Premium Pass. Gain access to expert tools and advice from proven winners. Import your league's settings with TeamSync and get expert advice customized for your league's specific settings. Win more with RotoBaller's lineup assistant tools, free agent finder, prop picks, and the number one DFS lineup optimizer. Our premium pass comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. So go over to rotoballer.com/radio and use the discount code TOOLSHED at checkout. All right, it's the start of a new era here on the Tool Shed podcast. Just going to be me for right now. This episode will be solo, just me, no guest on this one. So I wanted to kind of start off with just me, kind of given the new direction of the show. But I already have guests lined up for each of the next 2 weeks, two great guests, and working on more after that. So first off, I want to say, you know, thank you to my good friend Chris Clegg for 388 episodes on this podcast. Our first episode was around Halloween. It was late October of 2020, during the year where everybody started the podcast. I mean, I started two of them with the Five Tool podcast, but starting in March of that year, right as the pandemic was ramping up. That was interesting time for all of us, I know. But obviously, go support the great work he does. Again, I want to emphasize there was no bad blood between Chris and I. We're still very close friends. And, you know, nothing has changed there. He's going in a different direction, doesn't quite have the time to commit to this. So that's the reason he stepped away. But make sure you go check out all of his great work over at thedynastydugout.com. I mean, Chris is one of the best in the business for a reason. And hopefully you'll stick around. I mean, like I said, I am not stopping this podcast anytime soon. I mean, I've loved doing this. It gives me another avenue to talk baseball, to talk fantasy baseball, talk prospects. Outside of just, you know, doing the normal writing content, which I do love as well, but I like having different avenues to provide content and greatly appreciate everyone's support over the last really 4.5 years of this podcast and just in general, people that supported my work for the last 8.5, whatever years it's been since I've started doing this in general. So thanks to all of you. Hopefully you stick around, and I got a lot of great ideas for the show and a lot of great guests lined up. So it's going to be a lot of fun. So today, I'm going to start off talking about a couple of notable prospect promotions over the last couple of days. We got a little bit of a Tristan Cassis injury news here, obviously not great. So we'll kind of look at maybe some replacements, the first base landscape in general, because it's kind of in flux right now. Go over a little bit of Hunter Brown and then talk some prospect risers, fallers. Just kind of go over my recent update, which I'm recording this Sunday night, so I'm still fine-tuning it. Any ranks you hear me say, any numbers might change a little bit, but by the time you listen to this on Monday or Tuesday, that will be up. My May top 500 up on my Patreon. I'll have it posted on Twitter and Blue Sky as well if you're over there. So go check that out. And Dynasty rankings are up in the next day or two. Redraft rankings dropped last Friday on the site. So a lot of good stuff here over on the Patreon. A lot of rankings updates at the beginning of the month. Kind of a monthly ritual. Do it in that first week or so. Let's start with the Kobe Mayo promotion here. You know, I know the Mayo promotion last year, his first stint with Baltimore didn't go overly well. 098, 196, 098 slug last year, or slash line, excuse me. Last year, 4 hits, no extra base hits, 22 strikeouts, and 46 plate appearances. I don't take a lot of stock from that, you know, poor performance. It was 17 games, just 46 plate appearances. This is still one of the best prospect bats in the game. I mean, this year, 28 games for AAA Norfolk, was slashing .252, .347, .523, had 15 extra base hits in those 28 games, 7 doubles, 2 triples, 6 home runs, 16 walks to 27 strikeouts. And the metrics under the hood were pretty solid as well. I mean, it wasn't just a good overall surface line. He was running an 87.5% zone contact rate, right around 74% overall contact rate, 47% hard hit rate, and a 14.5% barrel rate. So, I mean, he was doing what he was expected to do, but now the big question is, can he do it in the major leagues? I mean, I'm still a Mayo believer. You know, I still think there's a chance for him to be, you know, an annual top 10 third baseman for fantasy purposes. You know, maybe he never gets up to that top tier, though I wouldn't entirely rule that out. You know, high, you know, a 90th, 95th percentile outcome for him is probably something like a 270 average, 30 plus home runs. But you probably dial back the average a little bit. That's on the high end, absolutely. So even if he's 250 and 30 plus, like, that puts him on like Mark Vientos range. You know, Vientos has been a little, you know, not great this year, but like, you know, back end top 100 guy, back end top 10 third baseman. So I think 250, 30, I think that's definitely attainable. And hopefully he gets a little bit of run here, as they had Ramon Urias go on the IL recently, a few days ago, with a strained hamstring. A few days before that, also a strained hamstring for Jordan Westberg. So hopefully this is not just a short-term thing while those two guys are on the IL. I mean, even before this Urias injury, I kind of thought Mayo's promotion was coming anyway. And I, you know, I talked about it in my Discord, and I think probably posted on Twitter as well, because at first base, Mountcastle has been really struggling, though he's still playing every day. So I kind of wondered if they made the change to put Mayo there. Mayo's played some first base, but at least he gets in there right now. He started on Sunday. Let's hopefully get some run here. I'm still looking to target Kobe Mayo right now. I still think he can be a back-end top 10 third baseman long-term, you know, 30 homer bat in the middle of, you know, what still should be a good Baltimore lineup. I know the lineup's been pretty down this year. I mean, their two best hitters have been Cedric Mullins and Ryan O'Hearn. You know, O'Hearn's been sneaky good. Mullins has been bouncing back, you know, but Gunner's struggling. Adley's struggling. Holiday popped 2 home runs on Sunday, but overall he hasn't been great. Yeah, so a lot of guys struggling. Even throughout that team, the pitching has been real, really struggling. So yeah, Baltimore's having a rough year, but I still think it's gonna be a good lineup long term. Still a lot of good young talent there. We'll see if they end up trading any of them for pitching help this year, because that pitching staff has been absolutely ransacked with injuries. Maybe Mayo gets shipped out, maybe Kierstad, not sure, but I still believe in Kobe Mayo and still think he's a pretty good dynasty target long term. The other promotion here was Hyesung Kim with the Los Angeles Dodgers, with Tommy Edman hitting the IL. I'm not as high on Kim, and I'm not even sure he's playing regularly for the Dodgers moving forward while Edman is out. You know, he played second base, shortstop, and center field pretty split. The most starts came at shortstop. In AAA Oklahoma City, 12 starts there, 9 in center, and 7 starts at second base, excuse me. So he'll look to kind of play that middle infield, play second base for them. But they also have Chris Taylor, who, you know, the Dodgers like. He's been there for a while. So I think maybe you see a little bit of a split there. Maybe it's a little bit of a platoon. They got Kike Hernandez too, who, you know, first two games this weekend, Taylor got the start on Saturday and Kike Hernandez on Sunday. So I think Kim will be in the mix. I just highly doubt it's going to be as an everyday player. So I'm not really looking to target a Hyesung Kim. Now I think he's going to be, you know, maybe a low end asset long term. I don't think this will be this year, but if he were to get into an everyday role, I think the overall value is fairly limited because there's just not a ton of power. Like, I don't really see him, you know, kind of advancing past being a, you know, a top, I'm like a 10 to 12 homer guy. You look at the power metrics in AAA, it was a 30% hard hit rate, 5% barrel rate. I mean, it's not, there's a little pop there. Again, 12, 10, 12 home runs, something like that. He's got a decent field to hit, that's for sure. But, and there's speed there too. It could be like a 25 steal guy, but I just don't see a lot of impact with the bat, and it's the Dodgers. So you really need to kind of stand out to get into that starting lineup full time, given all the options they have. So I kind of wonder if he's just up for now, and then they get Eben back and he's back into, a reserve role or in the minor leagues. So not really looking to go after Hyesung Kim right now, but Mayo definitely is a target for me. All right, let's move over to the first base position here. Tristan Casas, unfortunately, is out for the year. Had a ruptured patella tendon. I was watching the game, saw him. He was hit a little chopper over towards the first base side and ended up being a very close play at the bag. He was safe, but immediately, you saw the leg buckle, and he immediately went down in pain behind first base. You knew, like, all right, this is not going to be good. This is going to be a long-term thing. And yeah, he's out for the rest of this year and maybe part of next year. He had surgery on it on, I think it was today, on Sunday, or maybe it was yesterday. I can't remember. I think it was today though. And you see that this is usually like a 12 to 16 month thing. So we're looking at part of next year too. I mean, I doubt he's ready for the start of the season. That would be, 10 and a half, 11 months, which would be very, very soon and ahead of most every window you've seen. And I just don't see Casas being a guy that beats an injury ETA like that. I'm concerned with Casas moving forward, not on a skill level, because, I still believed, I was preaching to buy low to hold if you had him. I still think this is a guy that could hit 30 plus home runs annually if healthy, but this you could consider this kind of a freak thing, but, and I'm not saying Casas is out of shape by any means, but he's a big body guy, right? Like he's not out of shape, but he's a big lumbering body. And I feel like those guys maybe are just a little more susceptible to injuries. I mean, he had that rib injury last year, which completely derailed his season. And that is, I just kind of wonder, is he always going to have these injuries pop up? Is he going to be a guy that's just never or rarely playing 140, 150 plus games? You got to wonder that. So this is obviously going to be a pretty sizable drop down my dynasty rankings for Casas this update. He is definitely going to be, he was hanging around, I think I had him around 90 before this, which is already down. He was in like the 50 range start of the season, I believe, give or take a few spots either way. But, the early season struggle was causing him to dip a little bit in my rankings. But he's going to be maybe outside 200 now. I really got to look to see how far down, because this injury, again, I'm just concerned about the long-term durability with Tristan Casas. But, let's talk about some guys that we could see, or maybe you need our placement, right? I mean, in this first base position has been pretty up and down this year. A lot of top guys have been struggling, Vlad hasn't been bad, but he hasn't been Vlad. Harper's been kind of meh. Matt Olson's been kind of meh. So you're kind of looking for maybe a replacement, maybe a trade target here. So I figured we'd just kind of look at the first base position in general and kind of see where it's at, maybe some targets. Just look at the position as a whole here. We've had some pretty notable breakouts as well. Tyler Soderstrom breaking out, Ben Rice breaking out. Torkelson's back in our lives after not being so the last year or so. Alec Bohm has been really struggling. Vinny Pasquantino is struggling. So, Bellinger, it's been a pretty rough year, especially for the top guys. So if you have Casas, if you have a Vinny Pasquantino, should be Spencer Steer. Now, these are all guys that you're probably looking to make it, make a change, shift it up, shake it up a little bit at first base. The first guy I'd look to target, this would be a trade. Obviously, he's not going to be sitting out there on your waiver wire, but trade target number one for me would be Michael Busch of the Chicago Cubs. so far in 128 plate appearances, slashing 268, 359, 509 with 6 home runs and 2 steals. You know, he's made some improvements from last year. Quality of contact's pretty similar to last year. Doesn't like not blow you away, but it's an 11% barrel rate, 89.5 mile an hour average exit velo, 37.5% hard hit rate. So slightly above league average across the board there, especially in the barrel rate department. You know, he has a healthy pull air rate of 23.8%. He's improved his zone contact rate about 2% this year, overall about 2.5%, while also dropping the K rate by a little over 5% overall. So, you know, XBA this year is 250. It was 217 last year. Is he probably limited to being in the 250 to 270 range? Yeah. I mean, he's hitting 268 right now. Don't really see him ever hitting like 280, 290. But if you can get, you know, it's kind of going in the middle of that range, 260 out of him with 25 to 30 home runs, which I think he has the power for, you know, when you combine quality of contact with the angles, I mean, 15 degree average launch angle, 40% sweet spot rate, which is a, you know, top 20% of baseball there, ex-Wobicon of 420. So when he hits the ball, he hits at the ideal angles. So I think you can see 25 to 30 home runs. That Cubs lineup is pretty good. It's been, you know, the best or one of the best lineups in baseball this year. And last time I checked, they had the most runs per game in baseball. I haven't looked in several days, so I don't know if that changed from the last time I looked at it. But, you know, Michael Busch, I think, would be my first trade target because he kind of gets lost in the shuffle. I mean, everyone talks, like last year, like all the big, I mean, last year was maybe the best rookie class we've had in a long time, especially in the National League, when you had Jackson Churio, you had Jackson Merrill, you had Paul Skeens, Shota Imanaga, who unfortunately got hurt today as well with a hamstring issue, and you had Spencer Schwellenbach, among others. Like, that was an absolutely loaded class in the National League. And Michael Busch, well, he had a solid season. You know, 248, 335, 440, 21 home runs. That's a very respectable rookie season, but I'd have to look where he finished in, you know, rookie of the year voting. It could have been higher than sixth or seventh at best, probably more closer to eighth, ninth, tenth. So he kind of gets lost in the shuffle. He always did as a Dodgers prospect too. It was always the flashier guys, but he's still 27 years old and just gets undervalued. Like, I have him right around 150 overall. Let's see what I have. Yeah, I'm 161 at this very second, probably above him a little bit before the update. So he'll be in that 150 range, which is looking like, what's that, about first base 15 or so in my rankings. I mean, I probably would still prefer him to Torque a little bit, though that's getting close. I would take Rice and Soderstrom over Busch, but I don't think it's going to be like a massive gap, you know, moving forward. I think they'll all settle in that 100 to 150 range. You know, maybe Rice and Soderstrom getting that 100. I got to look at those rankings a little bit more before I update, but have them ahead. But I think Busch is the more, you know, good value of them in terms of perceived value and price tag, which I still think is a good value. So I would go after Michael Busch here for a trade target. Next one I'm looking at here is Kyle Manzardo as a potential trade target. 8 home runs this year, but only hitting 219. You know, 325 OBP, 495 slug. But even though the average is 219 and the XBA is even lower, actually, it's 198 XBA right now, there's still some positives here in the profile to take away. You know, first and foremost, he's hitting for power. 43% hard hit rate, 15.3% barrel rate, 89 mile an hour average exit velocity. He has improved the walk rate, kind of back to where we saw him be at in the minor leagues. You know, he was always a high OBP, high walk rate guy, but that was only 5.8% last year in 156 play appearances. Very un-Manzardo like. Back up to 12.4% this year. That's what we came to know and love, you know, with Manzardo, him getting on base. You know, K rate's still kind of in that 27% range, which is higher, yeah, but that's not detrimental by any means. He also has, you know, great angles. So he hits the ball at ideal angles. I mean, the sweet spot rate is actually below league average, believe it or not. But he's got a healthy 68% air rate overall, 43% fly ball rate, only has a 32% ground ball rate, and a 30.6% pull air rate, which is one of the better marks in all of baseball. He's not chasing much at all. He's dropped the chase rate 6% down to 21.6%. And the contact rates, both zone and overall, while they are below average, they're not terrible. It's a 77% zone, 72% overall. So, yeah, the average will be a bit lower, but I don't think it's 219 level. I think he could be more of like a 240, 250 hitter with 25-plus home runs a year. So that's still not like a top, you know, 15 starting caliber first baseman, but that'll put you like a solid corner infielder range. And in, I think the price tag on him is still pretty low. I think the perceived value is pretty low. So yeah, I think Manzardo is a very respectable trade target right now. Some other ones here. I mean, those are my top two. I mean, you know, I haven't even mentioned Jake Berger yet. He got sent down the other day, though they say he should be back up soon. But at the same time, looking at some of these guys that are struggling, you know, I still believe Vinny P will bounce back. I mean, his bat speed has gone up this year, which usually you think, oh, great, he's swinging the bat harder. But I saw an interview, I think it was on MLB Network. He was in the studio, and he was talking about him and, you know, his people, the, you know, the coaches and everybody in his kind of circle, kind of trying to find the happy medium because he's gotten into some bad habits and the results haven't been there at this higher bat speed. So, I mean, I don't think he's trying to actively swing slower by any means, but I think they're just trying to find where's that sweet spot for him? Where is that range for him where he can do the most damage? And it's not like every metric for him is bad right now. I mean, yeah, the K rate's gone up, but it's still 18%. You know, walk rates continue to trickle down, and that's even before this year. You know, he was around 12% rookie year, and then it's been down to 9.6, 7.2, and 6.5. So that's a little discouraging, but he's also got a good pull air rate at 27%. Zone contact is still high, 88.5%. Overall contact, just a hair under 80%. Chasing a little bit more, but that's not a terrible mark there. And he's still hitting the ball fairly hard. 8.7% barrel rate, 90 mile an hour average exit velocity, and a 39.8% hard hit rate. So right now you see the 197, 252, 386 slash line kind of puts you off, but I think he's a good buy low target right now. I do think he's going to bounce back. Is he going to be a stud? Probably not. Is he going to be a top 10 guy? Maybe not there, but maybe he's more of a, you know, top 11 to 15 range first baseman, you know, back end starter, high-end corner infield type. But I do think that, you know, he's going to bounce back and be still a solid bat at the first base position. I do think Steer bounces back too. I mean, I don't know how fully healthy he is right now. It's been a rough year from him, but, you know, I was a believer preseason, and I think the price tag on a Spencer Steer is pretty low right now. Like, I think the perceived value has taken a pretty sizable drop because he's got 3 home runs, 2 steals right now, 206, 280, 327 slash line. But he's still got a 9% barrel rate. Hard hit rates dropped about 9.5%. So that is just not great there. But, you know, still has a good approach. Doesn't strike out too much. You know, hits the ball in the air consistently. Decent pull air rate of 21.5%. But the zone contact's gone down about 8.4%, though he's got improved the chase rate. So a little good, little bad, some improvement, some, you know, metrics going the other way. But I still think he's going to be a solid bat, one of those rare first base eligible guys that can provide you some speed as well. I mean, maybe he doesn't get back to the 25 steal range like he was last year, but still got to give you double digit steals. And I think he's going to get it going here pretty soon. So I would look to buy low on Spencer Steer. You know, another one, you know, super cheap target here. I mean, Michael Taglia, I'm not sure. You know, he's one that'd be like in the super cheap range right now. His home road splits, and I posted this on Twitter a few days back, are really, really stark. I think he had like a K rate over 50% at home, on the road, and you know, he was okay at home, but you know, he's more of a, if you really, really searching hard for a first baseman, though Nathaniel Lowe's having kind of a sneaky solid year. Luis Arraez is back from his scary little injury. So maybe those could be two, you know, low price targets here. But the other one I've been kind of looking at, and I'm not sure if I want to buy low on this guy because I don't know if he forgot how to hit home runs or just hit in general, but he has zero home runs so far. That's Alec Bohm, 135 plate appearances, big old goose egg in the home run column, 228, 267, 283 slash line. He better get going because Otto Kemp is mashing in AAA. So you got to wonder if he's going to be in that lineup soon and then make a switch. I'm not sure. But the metrics with Bohm aren't terrible. His quality of contact has actually gotten better. His barrel rates improved 2% from 6.8 to 8.8%. His hard hit rate's gone up about 3.5% from 45.6 to 49. Average EV has ticked up nearly a full tick up to 91.3. Still striking out better than league average rate, 16.9%. I mean, he doesn't walk at all, and that's gotten worse. I mean, he's been 6.5%, 7% the last 2 years. It's only 2.3% this year, which is definitely not great, but still has a, you know, 92% zone contact, 86% overall contact. Both of those would be career best marks. If the season were to end today, he's improved the chase rate. So he's actually, you know, a lot of these metrics are looking good. It's just a matter of he does not hit the ball at good angles. He has a 49% ground ball rate, which is his highest since 2021. And, you know, that's only a 51% air rate. He doesn't really get to his pull side that often. He has a career low 24.5% pull rate and only a 6.9% pull air rate. So I'm struggling whether I want to buy low because, as I mentioned, a lot of those metrics are still very good, but he's got to start hitting the ball in the air more consistently, even to get back to that 15 to 20 homer range. I think I kind of had lost hope of Bohm, even though he has the quality of contact to be a 30 homer guy. But the angles really limit him. Like, there's more to goes in the power, obviously, than just hitting the ball hard. And we've seen that with Alec Bohm. Like, all right, maybe he's just that 15 to 20 homer guy with a solid average. And that guy's still in there, I think. So I think I would lean towards buying Bohm. But again, he's got to start hitting better soon because Otto Kemp is breathing down his neck. He had his 10th home run today in AAA. You know, slash line is ridiculous. It's like 350 plus average, 470 OBP, something like that. I forget what it is. But Otto Kemp has been really, really hitting the ball hard. And he's a guy that's going to be probably up at some point this summer. So Bohm, I don't know how long the leash is on Bohm, but I think I would look to buy low given where the price tag is in Dynasty Leagues right now. All right. You know, let's move past this first base spot. Talk a little Hunter Brown. You know, Hunter Brown is, I mean, at this point, I don't see why you don't rank him as a top 100, or not top 100, I mean, a top 10 overall pitcher. For both for redraft and Dynasty, I think I had him in my redraft rankings that I published on Friday. I think it was, what was it? I think 7th or 8th in my redraft rankings, something like that. And I think, honestly, I could have gone even higher than that because he's been arguably the best pitcher in baseball since, you know, obviously we all know last year started out really poorly for Hunter Brown. I mean, the first, what was it, five, six, seven starts, whatever it was, several weeks of the season, he was terrible. It was basically the point where people were dropping him. People were asking if he was a bust. Like, people were asking me, like, should I drop him for, you know, Joe Schmo? No. I mean, I was telling everybody to hold. I didn't think he'd be this good after he got it going. But, you know, I posted this. This was a couple days ago. I posted this on the 2nd of May. So maybe it's changed a little bit, but probably not. But Hunter Brown's ranks over the last, let's see, since he got it going on May 28th. That was his first good start last year where that streak really started. So since that start, his MLB ranks among the 80 pitchers that have 120 innings in that time span. He has a 2.03 ERA first, 1.04 WHIP 10th, 27.2% strikeout rate 16th, 20.5% K minus BB 15th, 2.13 batting average against 11th, 3.03 xFIP 7th, 3.27 Sierra 9th. So that's a lot of top. I mean, what was the worst one there? 16th. And that's still a 27% K rate. It's nothing to scoff at. And he just seems to be getting better and better. He might be the front runner for AL Cy Young at this current point in time. And again, I don't see, outside of having a smaller track record, which I don't really hold against him. I mean, we've pushed guys high in, you know, dynasty rankings with a small track record. We do it prospect rankings too. You see guys like Jesus Madé get bumped up. You know, if the talent's there, and it's not like he's doing this, oh, three starts and we're bumping him up that high. No, it's been nearly a full calendar year of him being one of the 5 to 10 best pitchers in baseball. So I think at this point, you have to put him in that discussion of being a top 10 for both redraft and dynasty. You look at, for dynasty rankings, all right, tier one, it, you know, it's Skeens and Scooble. All right, boom, tier one. Tier two for me is Garrett Crochet, it's Spencer Strider, it's Hunter Green, and it's Logan Gilbert. So that's 3 through 6. After that, then the next tier for me, which is 5 guys, has him in it. It's Yoshinobu Yamamoto, it's Hunter Brown, Spencer Schwellenbach, it's Yuri Perez, who's starting his rehab assignment. He's got 2 starts in, so he'll be back hopefully. I think they said 8 total, so 6 rehab starts left, so another, say, month and a half or so. He's in it, and then Zach Wheeler, who's the old man in the group, but, I mean, he still deserves to be up there, I think. I mean, yeah, he's 34, almost 35, but Wheeler, you know, he's been the model of consistency, so he's at the bottom of that, but so that's tier 3. So that is, 7 through 11 in my dynasty rankings, and that drops off to some of the other guys that have a lot more questions. You know, obviously Corbin Burns is falling down. Roki hasn't been great. Snell's hurt again. Cole Reagans, I skipped over him by accident. Cole Reagans is in that tier as well. So that's 7 through 12 in my dynasty starting pitcher rankings. And I think he's definitely earned being up there. And he might even be able to jump up into that next tier. I mean, I don't think he's going to be a top 3-4 guy. I don't think he's going to get up to like Garrett Crochet level or anything like that, or, you know, threaten Skeens and Scooble for that top tier. But I think he's top 10 right now, and I'm buying it. You know, he was a top prospect with Houston, maybe the best pitching prospect they've had, because you got to remember, while they've had a lot of good pitchers in Houston, not many of them were ranked super high in prospect rankings. They were ranked decently. There was like some top 100 guys, but it wasn't like the oh, wow, can't miss uber prospect. The only other one I can think off the top of my head didn't work out, and that's Forrest Whitley, who was obviously number one pitching prospect for a couple of years, and then he's had a really rough last 5 years or so. But with Hunter Brown, like, he does so many things well. He doesn't walk many batters at all. It's a 6.3% walk rate, 31% K rate this year, so he's missing more bats this year than he did last year. Doesn't give up a lot of hard contact either. You know, both last year and this year, average EV allowed 86 miles an hour. Hard hit rate, you know, around 30 miles an hour. Doesn't give up a lot of hard hits. Gets a, you know, healthy ground ball rate, 48.5%. Doesn't give up a lot of pulled air, you know, balls. It's a lot of good stuff here. You know, better than league average whiff rate and zone contact rate and chase rate. Kind of across the board. It's just a lot of good from Hunter Brown. So I am buying. You know, look at the Savant sliders. They're all the worst Savant slider for him. Is his XBA 61st percentile. It's all, like, for the most part, 68th to 90th percentile for Hunter Brown. So I'm buying him as a top 10 guy. I'm definitely believing in him. And yeah, he's earned the ranking that he has right now. All right, let's end the show here with some prospect rankings discussion. As you're listening to this, my top 500 prospect rankings for May will be out, so you can go digest all of those over on my Patreon, toolshedfantasy.com. Should be right there at the top. And this was a difficult. That first in-season rankings update is always difficult because you get a lot of new data. You know, you got to try to figure out what you're buying into, what you're not buying into so much, like what's real, what's smoke. There's so much to digest in this first ranking update. And after the top two, it was really tough for me. Is that, and call me a homer all you freaking want, but the top two prospects in baseball are now Roman Anthony and Christian Campbell. That's just how it is. All right. You know, even if you included Roki, Roki's now graduated. He's off any list, regardless if you included him or not. But when it comes to combining, you know, skill set, upside, ceiling, floor, proximity, all of that, the two top prospects in baseball, my number one is still Roman Anthony. My number two is Christian Campbell. Oh, and to add a little caveat that I forgot in the first base part of this episode, there have been talks about, oh, would they bring up Roman Anthony to play first? No. They've basically said no on that. That's not happening. You know, oh, would they bring up Marcelo Meyer? Highly doubt it. He's a good defensive shortstop. I don't see that happening. I don't know what they're going to do at first base, the Red Sox. You know, maybe it's, you know, going the Dom Smith route and getting this like a fill-in. I don't know if they want to move Willy Abreu, a Gold Glove right fielder, to first. I don't know. So I don't think it's going to be Anthony or Meyer. So I just want to throw that caveat in there from earlier. But back to the rankings here. So really at three is when it opens up. I mean, you could go 1,000 different ways with this. And I really wouldn't have any issue with any of my next, like, 12 guys in my rankings being number three. So at this very second, you know, it might change. I have Nick Kurtz at three. I mean, yeah, he hasn't been the greatest with the Athletics so far, but this is, you know, arguably the safest bat in all of the minor leagues. You know, it's either him or Anthony for safest bat. And he has the upside to be a top five mashing first baseman that hits 270 plus, gets on base at a high clip, and hits you 35 to 40 home runs. So I think he warranted that number three spot. After that, you get a little younger. I got Jesus Madé and Leo DeVries 4-5 now. Again, it's really pretty open in that top 15 or so, but I've bumped up Madé from 16 to 4 and DeVries from 18 to 5. Both started off very good this year, showing, you know, good contact skills, good, you know, advanced approach for their age. You know, DeVries is almost walking more than he's striking out right now. You know, they're showing power, they're showing speed and ability to steal bags. So I feel like it's time to put them up in that range. And I still got Travis Bezzana at six. He hasn't changed. You know, not the greatest start for him, but still very much believe in the bat. So I kept him in the sixth spot. Connor Griffin is up from 27 to 7, off to a phenomenal start. You know, 5 home runs, 11 steals already. Didn't want to go any high. I think that's already a pretty good jump. So I think the upside might be the highest of any prospect right now. Connor Griffin, like, if everything clicks, 100th percentile outcome, I think Griffin might have the highest upside, highest ceiling. So you got to balance that, and he's already showing a lot of exciting tools, but he's striking out around 30% of the time, walk rate's around 6%. So there's still obviously a lot of room to grow with Griffin. So I'm not going to put him 3-4 just yet, but and I think he could be, you know, top five by end of the season, maybe even number one. I mean, number one, future number one is kind of wide open once Anthony gets up and graduates. Campbell, this will be the last update with Christian Campbell, you know, as I shed a proverbial tear over here, you know, as I love Christian Campbell, but he should graduate by the next update, or he'd probably graduate, I think, within the next week, actually. So no more him and no more Anthony at some point and no more Kurtz. So top three should be all gone by, you know, I'd hope by the All-Star break at the latest. I don't know how much longer they're going to play the waiting game with Anthony in Boston, but it's going to be wide open. You know, so you could see Madé number one. You could see DeVries number one. Griffin, Bezzana, Walcott. You know, there's a lot of guys could be number one. All right. At number eight is Jordan Lawler. He is, I mean, if there was a fantasy for minor leagues, he'd be the number one player right now with what he's doing. Slashing, entering Sunday was 369, 454, 664, 6 home runs, and 12 steals, 12% walk rate, K rate right around 22 5%. You know, Lawler is that very fantasy-friendly profile, and just got to wait for a spot to open up. He's been playing primarily second base, but Ketel Marte is back for the Diamondbacks. You know, Tim Tawa got that call, which I think shocked a lot of people, myself included. But, you know, Lawler, he's been in contact around 75% of the time, 44.7% hard hit rate with a 10.5% barrel rate. And I said, mentioned the walk rate and K rate are both pretty good. And, you know, zone contact has been pretty solid as well, around 83% zone contact, you know, decent launch angle too. So, you know, he's a plus runner. We know that. He's a good athlete. Maybe he's a guy that ends up with multi-position eligibility. So I think I figured it was a good time to bump him back into my top 10 where he's been before, given the start he's had and some of the improvements he's had under the hood. I'm running up the top 10. I got Sebastian Walcott at 9, a little bit of a slow start. He's dropped from 5 to 9 for me, but you know the upside is right there with anybody in the minor leagues right now, and he's still barely 19 in double A. So you got to take that into account too. And number 10, I got Max Clark. And then to kind of round out, you know, I'll just list off 11 through 20 here. So Clark was at 10. And then I'm going J.J. Weatherholt at 11. Walker Jenkins at 12. I mean, I think he's still a top five talent, but I have some concerns about him staying healthy. The same thing I have with a lot of these Minnesota guys. Even at the major league level, Minnesota has not shown that they can keep guys healthy for the most part. So I'm concerned with that. I'm just concerned of there's going to be a durability concern with him long term. So he falls from 4 to 12. I get Zaire Hope at 13. Matty Shaw at 14, who I think is back up soon. And he's a good buy low right now as well. I don't, you know, think anything of his debut. Again, like I said with Mayo, still like the all-around profile of Matt Shaw long-term. 15 is Josue De Paula of the Dodgers, one of the best pure bats in the minor leagues. I think he's, you know, deserving of a top 20 rank at this point. A couple Baltimore guys, Sammy Basayo at 16, Kobe Mayo at 17, Jackson Jobe is 18, Manuel Rodriguez has fallen to 19 and might even fall lower. I have a lot of concerns. There's a lot of upside there, but I have a lot of concerns, a lot of red flags with Manuel Rodriguez. So he might even fall further, you know, tonight as I finish updating these. Again, these ranks are probably going to shift a little bit as I finish tinkering tonight. Andrew Painter at 20, and then 21 through 25 is Bubba Chandler, Kevin McGonigal, who's also hurt right now, Jack Caglione, 23, Dalton Rushing, and Felonin Celestin rounding out my top 25. That I feel pretty good about. DeLauder is still 26, if anyone was wondering, and Marcelo Meyer, 27th. I'm not going to keep listing off every rank here. Again, if you want to see the full 500, go over to my Patreon, toolshipfantasy.com, to check out the entire 500. But wanted to discuss some risers and followers here. You know, a big riser for me, you know, and for everybody right now, Luis Pena of the Milwaukee Brewers. I mean, Chris Clegg just saw him a couple weeks ago when we talked about him on Toolshed last week, so I'm not going to go that super in-depth there. But he's, you know, everything you want to see from him is great right now. I mean, he's a premium athlete, elite runner. He already has 15 steals, more walks and strikeouts, 414 OBP, 333 average right now. You just got to wonder how much power does he get to. So I've seen some people say, oh, he's top 10, he's top 15, he's top 20. I'm not ready to go there, especially with the guys that are already in there that I just listed. I cannot put him up in that range yet. I think people have said that same thing with Breylon Payne as well, who I also like, but I'm not ready to go that high with Breylon Payne either. But I have, I just lost my spot. There he is. I have Luis Pena at 46 right now. So I think he's top 50. That is an 88 spot jump from 134 to start the season. And I think he's deserving of a top 50 rank there. I mean, if he gets more power, he could be top 10. Absolutely. Just not ready to go that high on him yet. You know, Moises Ballesteros is now in my top 50 as well, up to 42 at the moment. I mean, he's been terrorizing the PCL, almost hitting 400 right now, 391 through his first 122 play appearances, four home runs, even three steals, only a 10.7% walk rate. You know, but Ballesteros is, you can say, one of the best pure bats in the minor leagues. I think that's, you know, safe to say. It's just, where does he fit long-term with this Cubs team? I mean, he's limited to being first, catcher or a DH. I don't even see first base in his future. He's not that tall. I think he's like, what, 5'8" or something like that. So not really a guy that you want to put at first base, at least not, you know, every day. And they have, you know, Miguel Amaya and Carson Kelly, who's been a solid duo behind the plate. And Seiya Suzuki is at DH. But Ballesteros has a contact rate above 80% right now, hard hit rate of 45.5%. And a lot of good. If you're anywhere near, you know, AAA Iowa, I don't even know what town. I'm going to look that up right now. What city in Iowa that's in, I'm assuming it's in like Des Moines. Yeah, it's Des Moines. Okay. Yeah. So if you're anywhere near Des Moines, Iowa, you know, I'd go out and see this team because there's a lot of good talent there that might not be there for long, including Cade Horton, who might get the call with Imanaga maybe going on the IL. Horton had another good start today. You know, one earned run or less in all six starts so far. I think his ERA is in the low ones right now, kind of bouncing back nicely this year. So he might be up soon. So, yeah, take advantage of that if you're anywhere near in the Des Moines, Iowa area. See some good minor league action there with the Iowa Cubs. But, yeah, Ballesteros, in terms of catching prospects, he is at this point behind. Basayo is number one at catcher. Then Dalton Rushing. And then Augustine Ramirez. And then I have Ballesteros fourth now. He's jumped ahead of Baldwin. He's jumped ahead of Josue Briseño, who probably no longer a catcher. He's jumped ahead of Teal. And then that was it for guys he jumped ahead. But yeah, he's definitely jumped up into that top 50 range. You know, another catcher. We'll keep it right there with catchers real quick. Looking at Eduardo Tait of the Philadelphia Phillies. He is now in my top 100 overall. You know, power is there with Tait. I mean, there's a lot of power in this profile. You still kind of got to wonder, you know, where the average winds up for him. You know, is he going to be more of like a 240, 250 guy? Can he hit for more average? Is he going to be able to get on base? It's a bit of an aggressive profile right now, but you can't deny the upside with Tait and the power, as I mentioned, which is really impressive. 40% hard hit rate right now and a 12% barrel rate, which for his age, that's very, very good. You know, contact rate's around 73% overall. And then when you look in zone, it's not like these aren't terrible rates by any means, but that's like the one question, you know, I kind of have with his profile. But the zone is around 80% zone. So again, not terrible. I want to see maybe be a little more patient at the plate. Doesn't have a high walk rate right now. Kind of hunt out more pitches to hit. So I think Tait could make an even bigger jump and be a top 50 overall and top five overall catching prospect here, you know, before the end of the season. You know, a couple of outfielders here that have jumped up into my top 100. You know, both were in a similar range before last update. They're still in a similar range. Breylon Payne, who already kind of alluded to a little bit earlier, Slade Caldwell of the Arizona Diamondbacks, both off to very good starts. They both have a very toolsy profile. Both are premium athletes, got a little bit of pop in the profile. Kind of got to see where that pop goes. That's the X factor for these two, as it was with Pena. You know, where does the power wind up? But Payne, Caldwell, they're both very close in age too. I think they're only like a month and a half or so apart, with Caldwell being older by several weeks, but you know, both off to pretty good starts. I mean, Caldwell has an OBP over 500 so far, so I might even bump him up a little bit more. In terms of outfielders, I mean, at this point, you know, I think he's a top 10 outfield prospect for me. I'd have to look, but I like him. I bumped him ahead of guys like, you know, Kevin Alcantara, who's been kind of sliding down my rankings pretty consistently. You know, I don't have him like top 50 yet. I don't have him up in the Jason Churio range, though Churio has been off to a kind of poor start so far. But you know, I don't have him in terms of like the, you know, Aiden Smith, Brayden Montgomery, Lazaro Montez range. He's that next tier down. But Payne, Caldwell both have the upside to get up into that range for sure. You know, I think the biggest you know, pitching prospect riser here. I'm kind of looking right below these guys. Currently, I have him at 81, though I bump him up a little more. Nolan McLean with the New York Mets currently has a 1.37 ERA, 1.22 WHIP, 11% walk rate, 28% K rate. The sweeper is absolutely filthy with him, and you know, fastball is pretty good as well. I think it's a plus fastball. I think the sweeper, as we've seen, that has been a massive swing and miss offering for him all season. And it's on, you find the gifts of it. It just kind of takes off, you know, away from right-handed batters. You know, still a little bit of a walk issue there with McLean, but you know, I think the upside is just absolutely there. I mean, changeup is solid as well. Also has, you know, a slider as well. I'm more of a traditional slider. He's got the sweeper. He's got the slider. So can miss bats with both of those. Fastball again, is, you know, mid 90s, can tick up into the upper 90s. You know, good, you know, flat approach angle with that. A lot of kind of hop in the zone, so to speak. So, you know, I think maybe SP2 upside with McLean. And I think at this point, I think it's a real discussion as to who's the better pitching prospect in the Met system between him and Brandon Sproat. I got to really think about that and who will have ranked higher tomorrow. And Jonah Tong, you know, obviously upside guy as well. Not quite as high as these guys, but I think it's a real discussion now. Sproat versus McLean. You know, both are, you know, a little bit older. I think Sproat's 24 and McLean's 23, I believe, but they're both on the, you know, higher end of those ages. But yeah, McLean is right in that discussion for top 10 pitching prospect right now, and deservedly so. And the last guy in the top 100 here that I want to talk about on this show is Arun Escobar. I mean, him and Otto Kemp have been absolutely phenomenal this year. And, you know, Arun Escobar, I mean, this Philly system, I think, is actually sneaky good now. It's still not a great system by any means, but I think it is a sneaky good system right now, especially with the breakouts of Arun Escobar and Otto Kemp. You know, Otto Kemp is a guy that I think is pushing top 100 right now. You know, 10 home runs, 5 steals this year, had that home run today, and should be up soon. A little bit older, so I think he's actually good. You know, even though he's, you know, tearing the cover off the ball, and the metrics kind of back it up, especially with the quality of contact. I think the contact rate is a little bit, you know, like the low 70s, but quality of contact is absolutely there. He'll be, you know, in a good ballpark, good lineup there in Philly. Just got to wonder when they make that change from Boehm, or if there's an injury. But I think he's almost 26 now. It's a little bit older, but that use that to your advantage. You know, if he still has a pretty, you know, reasonable price tag in Dynasty, I think Otto Kemp is a great target. And I think Arun Escobar is a phenomenal target because he hasn't gotten the, you know, the jump in terms of perceived value yet, because this is a guy that wasn't really ranked super high entering the year. I was guilty of that as well. I mean, last update for me, he was 346. Now he's top 100 for me. And I think I feel pretty good putting him there. I mean, it's not a standout profile by any means. Like, he's not a, you know, good runner. I don't think he's been more than a 5 to 10 steal per year guy, if that. I mean, he's got 1 steal so far this year. He had 9 last year in 24 games at the complex level. I just don't think that's going to be ever a big part of his game. We saw last year, again, it was only 104 plate appearances, but 338, 495, 481 slash line last year in those 24 games, 3 home runs, 9 steals. I think there's could be above average raw power in time with Escobar. Still has a little bit of time to fill out his frame. He's only 20 years old. He'll be 20 the entire year. He was actually born on New Year's Day of 2005, so he'll be 20 the entire year. And Arun's actually his middle name. I'm just finding out. First name is actually, I'm going to say this wrong, Agnel. It's A-G-N-N-E-L. I probably said that wrong, and I apologize. But Arun's actually his middle name. Fun little fact there. So again, not a standout profile, but he has a really good field of hit. There is, and I think there's sneaky pop in the profile, and he's just very advanced for his age. I mean, he's on that Clearwater team with Eduardo Tait, and Escobar is currently running an 88.5% zone contact rate right now, which is, for his, in general, that is a phenomenal zone contact rate. But especially for his age, to have that along with, you know, a walk rate a little above 13% and a K rate around 21%, that is a good blend of contact and approach for anybody, especially a 20-year-old right now. And overall, it's about a 77% contact rate, and he's got a 54% hard hit rate. Just hitting the ball into the ground a little too often right now, but still has the home runs, several home runs so far this year, 5 home runs with a 342, 449, 598 slash line. So good all-round showing so far from Aroon Escobar. So yeah, I think he's top 100 and could be pushing top 50 soon. Not sure he's going to go a lot higher than that given the lack of speed that he has. But yeah, Aroon Escobar is definitely a breakout to buy into right now in the low levels of the minors. All right, that's going to wrap up this episode of the Tool Shed Podcast. Again, you know, new direction of the show. I'm trying to have a guest on at least half the time, so you don't have to listen to just me ramble the entire time. Should be half, closer to 2/3 of the time. Hopefully there'll be a guest. And if the right fit comes along, I'll find a new co-host down the road, but not going to rush that. But thank you to everyone for tuning in. Thank you for all the support. And I'll be back with you again next week. But until then, everyone take care.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.